History isn't just a bunch of names and dates and facts. It's the collection of all the stories throughout human history that explain how and why we got here. Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, where we look at the forgotten, neglected, strange, and even counterfactual stories that made our world what it is. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Abraham Lincoln was apparently one of those men who thought that marital bliss was impossible. During the Civil War, he pardoned a Union soldier who had deserted the army to return home to wed his sweetheart. As the president signed a document sparing the soldier's life, Lincoln said, "I want to punish the young man. Probably in less than a year, he will wish I had withheld the pardon." Today's guest is Michael Burlingame. He's the author of the book An American Marriage, and he reveals the tragic story of Abraham Lincoln's marriage to Mary Todd. Based on 30 years of research, An American Marriage describes and analyzes why Lincoln had good reason to regret his marriage to Mary Todd. This shows that as First Lady, Mary accepted bribes and kickbacks, sold permits and pardons, engaged in extortion, and peddled influence. The reader comes to learn that Lincoln wed Mary Todd because in all likelihood, she seduced him and then insisted that he protect her honor. And this hypothesis is actually mentioned on screen in the 2012 Steven Spielberg movie Lincoln. Perhaps surprisingly, the 5'2" Mrs. Lincoln often physically abused her 6'4" husband, as well as her children and servants, and she humiliated her husband in public and caused him as president to fear that she would disgrace him publicly. So something we get into in the discussion is how Lincoln was able to maintain his political career when it seemed like his life was sort of like the stage play Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, when a couple's marital problems are spilling out and making everything incredibly uncomfortable with everyone around them. Now, in the last 70 years or so, the historiography has come to largely support Mary Todd and say that, while a little bit eccentric, it was her who steeled Abraham's spine, who did things like push him to issue the Emancipation Proclamation because she was an ardent abolitionist. But as Burlingame argues, unlike her husband, she wasn't profoundly opposed to slavery and hardly qualifies as an ardent abolitionist that some historians have portrayed, and hinted that she supported the policies of politicians that would have been in favor of maintaining slavery. While she provided a useful stimulus to Abraham's ambition, because she was very ambitious in her own right, she often crushed his spirit, as his law partner put it. And in the end, Lincoln may not have had as successful a presidency as he did, where he showed incredible ability to deal with difficult people, if he hadn't had so much practice at home. So this is a fascinating look at one of the best-known marriages in American history and gives good explanation of how Abraham became the president that he was. So I hope you enjoyed this discussion with Michael Burlingame. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott, for having me.
You are the third guest we've had, well, actually the fourth guest to talk about a first lady. Another guest talked about Mary Todd, one about Edith Wilson, arguably the first female president, and a third about Lady Burr Johnson. And I'm curious, after 150 years, people are still fascinated about Mary Todd Lincoln. And why do you think that is? And it's not merely the proximity to Abraham, because there aren't as many books about, say, Martha Washington or the interest in her. So what did you think about it is both her and the marriage between her and Abraham that still fascinates people today?
Well, I think largely it's because of Abraham that he is the most popular historical president. And his personal life is a subject of some controversy because it was reported at the time by people who were knowledgeable about how the Lincolns got along with one another, that it was a very troubled marriage. And I think one of the reasons that the story of that troubled marriage is of more than routine interest to readers is because it's hard to imagine the way in which Lincoln overcame all the adversity to which he was subjected, a very difficult poverty-stricken childhood, a painful midlife crisis, the loss of his mother when he was 9 years old, having a very unsympathetic father, having a series of career failures, and then having the terrible burden of the Civil War leadership. On top of that, he managed to achieve what he did. Even though he didn't have a helpmate at home, he had a woman who was a burden, who he described to a friend as someone he was constantly afraid of because she would embarrass him and humiliate him publicly. And that he managed to achieve what he did without a helpmate, indeed with someone who was a hindrance, is truly remarkable. And you can't really appreciate the full achievement of Lincoln unless you appreciate how woe-filled his marriage truly was.
And I'll come back to that point later on in our discussion about the media fascination, because I think a lot of people assume about the private lives of presidents that, well, if you go back more than two or three generations, there was a gentleman's agreement, so the press would ignore, say, JFK's mistresses. But that's not a continuous line as we go in the past, and I would like to return to that. But first of all, I'm curious about the historical take on Mary Todd, on Abraham and Mary Todd, and how that historiography, how the popular view of their marriage and her in particular has changed over the years. Because if listeners remember, I had a guest several years ago named Catherine Clinton, who is the author of a book, Mrs. Clinton, A Life, and she paints about as positive of a picture of Mary Todd as you could probably find among biographies. She was the consultant for Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln, so that depiction of Mary Todd on screen comes a lot from her. So if you're a fan of Mary Todd, you're in a golden age right now. And she sort of accentuates all the positive aspects of her, downplays her faults, and interprets those faults in her book. But could you describe the historiography? What has been the, from the life of the two of them, what was the consensus about her and their marriage, and how has that changed over the years?
Well, for a long time, the image of the marriage was shaped by William Herndon's biography of Lincoln, which appeared in the late 1880s. And Herndon was Lincoln's law partner for 16 years. It was only a two-man firm, so he got to know her quite well. That is to got to know Lincoln, and through Lincoln, Mrs. Lincoln. And then Herndon went out and after Lincoln's assassination and got in touch with many people, scores of people who had known Lincoln and Mrs. Lincoln. And he interviewed them and corresponded with them and accumulated a huge archive, an absolute goldmine of information about Lincoln's early life, midlife, and even presidency. And based on his own personal recollections of daily life with Lincoln, as well as the scores of people with whom he spoke, he depicted the marriage as one of filled with woe, that she made life, as he put it, a burning, scorching hell for Lincoln. And for many years, that was the accepted interpretation. But then in the 1950s, a biography came out of Mary Lincoln, which was extremely positive and which took Herndon on head first. And that was written by a woman named Ruth Painter Randall. And it enjoyed great prestige because she was married to the leading Lincoln scholar of the day, James G. Randall, professor of history at the University of Illinois. And he had written a four-volume of Lincoln, the President, which was his magnum opus. And he had written several other important books about Lincoln. And as a very curious appendix to that four-volume set, he included something called, an appendix called Sifting the Ann Rutledge Evidence. And in that appendix, he argued that the story of Lincoln's romance when he was a young man living in New Salem, Illinois, with a woman named Ann Rutledge was a myth, and that she was a figment of Herndon's imagination, and that Herndon's notion that he, that is, Lincoln had fallen in love with Ann Rutledge, and then when she died before they could get married, his heart was buried with her, and that he no longer loved any other woman. And so the argument said that Herndon's depiction is inaccurate, that the reminiscences that he based his story upon were the feverish, delusional rantings of old timers who were drooling on their bibs and making up stories out of whole cloth. And so in this appendix, Herndon's interpretation of the marriage was discredited. And since he was the leading Lincoln scholar and he was the president of the American Historical Association, this essay went far to discredit the notion that Herndon had given an accurate portrayal of the marriage. And indeed, it went further to disparage all of the hundreds of interviews and letters that Lincoln, about Lincoln, that Herndon had collected. And so scholars regarded the Herndon archive, which is truly a goldmine of information, but instead of regarding it as a goldmine, scholars were led to believe, thanks to Randall's appendix, that the Herndon archive was to be treated not as a goldmine, but as a toxic nuclear waste dump. And so that image then of the Lincoln marriage and of the Ann Rutledge story and of the Herndon archive was set aside largely because of Randall's appendix, except it wasn't by Randall. It was by Mrs. Randall. But Lincoln Randall didn't tell you that his wife was the principal author of this appendix and that she had an axe to grind, that she was a Mary Lincoln apologist. And her book, Mary Lincoln Biography of a Marriage, was a hopelessly romanticized version of the Lincoln story, which handles historical evidence in the most casual and amateurish fashion. But because of Randall's prestige, and because of the notion that had taken root that the Herndon archive was absolutely untrustworthy, this romanticized image of the marriage became the dominant image. And then a generation later, with the emergence of the modern feminist movement, feminist historians came along and said, that not only was Mrs. Lincoln's marriage a happy marriage, but she was also a feminist pioneer. Well, that's demonstrably untrue. But those romanticized images and those politicized images have taken root, and they're based on very thin research. There's an enormous amount of information available about the Lincoln marriage, not just in the Herndon archive, but in reminiscences by people who knew them in Illinois and in Washington. And those sources have been badly ignored. And my contribution is largely going back, taking a look at all those neglected sources, not just in Herndon's archive, but in newspaper databases, which we can now search, which are magnificent tools. And there's an enormous amount of evidence that the marriage was truly woe-filled. But that evidence has been swept under the rug by the romanticization and the politicization of studies of the Lincoln marriage.
And before getting into the details of their life, what do you think the push is in the last 70 years to rehabilitate Mary Lincoln? Because if the goal is to have a female historical figure who's positive and inspirational, I mean, there's plenty of real life examples. You could take Abigail Adams. There's all sorts of first ladies that we can take who are educated, who were... in Abigail Adams' case, many argue she was the most important advisor for her husband. So of all people, Mary Lincoln, why do you think there's a push to rehabilitate her if your take is that she really was troubled in deeply unsettling ways?
Well, I got to think it's the popularity of Lincoln himself, that people want to know as much about Lincoln as they possibly can. And if the prevailing literature suggests that it was a happy marriage and that she was a feminist pioneer, then that's what people were likely to believe in the absence of any thorough investigation of the evidence. So I think it's Lincoln's popularity more than anything. And also it's the larger feminist project about bringing the role of women in the past to the forefront, which is a perfectly admirable undertaking, except when it becomes politicized and one-sided as it has been. And one of the most important books that is widely read and used today is by Catherine Clinton's fellow feminist, a historian named Jean Baker. Jean Baker's book was and is still widely read and assigned in colleges and universities and book clubs and the like. It was reviewed in the American Historical Association by one of the leading feminist historians of the day. And she pointed out in her review, in the American Historical Review, that, look, Mrs. Lincoln really behaved very badly. Now, you have to feel sorry for her because she did have a very troubled life, but she behaved very badly. And the kind of conduct she engaged in as First Lady would probably have led to a special prosecutor being appointed if she had been First Lady in recent times. And that there are plenty of other women who were victims of male dominance and having to operate in a world dominated by men, but who nevertheless did very important contributions, made important contributions to American life and social progress and political reform. But Mrs. Lincoln doesn't fall into that category, and there's no reason to lionize Mrs. Lincoln just because she was a woman and trying to make a way in a male-dominated world. There are lots of women who, at that time, performed important services, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and innumerable other women that were cited in this review, so that the reception, at least in some scholarly circles, by some feminist historians said, look, we don't need to lionize somebody who behaved as badly as Mrs. Lincoln. There are plenty of women who made valuable contributions to American life back then. And let's not bend over backwards to make Mrs. Lincoln into something admirable in the way that she wasn't.
There's a lot to uncover here, because as listeners understand here, it's not just the details of Abraham and Mary's life. It's how they've been interpreted over the years in a very long argument. But let's get into the salient details of their life. So could you describe the early years of Mary and Abraham and what brought them together, and what are the salient points of their life for the purposes of your book?
Sure. Well, they both had troubled childhoods. Very different in economic and social terms. That is to say, Lincoln was born into frontier poverty and raised in hard-scrabble frontier conditions, had less than a full year's education. He said that if you took all of his years in schooling and added them up, it would come to less than one full year. Whereas Mary Todd was born into a prosperous family in Lexington, Kentucky, prominent socially, prominent economically, prominent politically. She went to private school. She had a very advanced education for a woman in those years. So their backgrounds couldn't be more different from the perspective of socioeconomic indices. And yet they shared something very important in common. That is, they both lost their mother at a tender age. Mary Todd was 6 years old when her mother died, and Lincoln was 9 years old when his mother passed away. And they were both wounded by this loss. And it's one of the most grievous psychological blows that people can endure, is to lose a parent when the child is young, but before adolescence, because they don't understand it. And they feel abandoned. And oftentimes they interpret the death of a parent as a deliberate act of abandonment, which of course it isn't, but that's the way children tend to think. And so they're both wounded. Now, in Lincoln's case, he was able to deal with it in part because he had a stepmother who was a very positive influence. That when Lincoln's father remarried about 15 months after the death of his first wife, he brought into his life a very positive second wife who was a very supportive emotionally for young Lincoln. And yet the damage that was done by the death of his mother was pretty deep, because psychological studies have shown that the tendency to depression is oftentimes associated with the early loss of a parent. And now that's not the only reason why people get depressed, but that's a very fruitful source of depression in later life. And one of the ways in which that the damage of that wound could be mitigated is if the surviving parent is emotionally nurturant and supportive and available. And Thomas Lincoln wasn't. Lincoln's father doesn't fit that description. Lincoln and his father were not on the same wavelength. And Lincoln resented his father. His father was financially irresponsible and was constantly in economic trouble. And when Lincoln was an adolescent, his father would rent him out to neighbors, and Lincoln would go and perform backbreaking, hard, laborious farm chores and get paid 20 cents, 30 cents a day. And he would have to turn all that money over to his father, which he deeply resented. But that was the law of the land. You were not the property of your father, but your labor was, you know, your father's until you were 21. So any money you made was, according to law and custom, the property of your father. But anyway, so anyway, the stepmother comes along and helps undo some of that damage. But there was still plenty that made Lincoln somewhat chary about women. That if you get too close to them, they will abandon you, and you don't want to get too close. And on the other hand, Mary Todd had a problem, but not a problem of that particular sort. That is to say, her father quickly remarried, and unlike Lincoln, Mary Todd got a typical, or that is a more classically typical stepmother who was not particularly supportive and not particularly nurturing, the wicked stepmother model. And so Mary's father had already had six children by his first wife. And so his second wife comes along and is much younger than he, and says, now, dear, don't pay any attention to the children that you had by that dead woman. Pay attention to the children that we're going to have. And they had nine children. And so Mary Todd's father, in order to accommodate his new wife, tuned out Mary and her siblings, who felt deeply estranged from their stepmother. And so they fled. They left Lexington, Kentucky. They went to Illinois, where the firstborn, the oldest daughter, lived. And so she married the governor's son. And then she invited her younger sisters to come to Springfield. And they were introduced into society. And they met young men and they married them. And so one by one, they came from Lexington to Springfield. So Mary comes, her sister then introduces her to Springfield society, which then includes Lincoln. He's an upcoming young lawyer at that time. But Mary brings to the marriage a complicated set of psychological problems. One is her desperate need for a father figure, that her father had seemingly abandoned her, not physically. He had continued to support her and to provide a good home and a good education, but he was emotionally reserved. And that seems to have created in Mary a desperate need for a father figure. And so she was drawn to Abraham, who's 10 years older than she, who's a foot taller, who radiates a quality of wisdom. Even as a young man, people detected something in Lincoln that was reminiscent of a wise older man. And so she was drawing to him as a father surrogate. And so she set her cap for him and pursued him aggressively. But when she finally landed him, all her anger at her father for having abandoned her then gets displaced onto Lincoln. And so Lincoln is the target of this anger, which manifests itself very early in the marriage. And he deals with it by staying away from home as much as possible. As a lawyer, he went out on the circuit. That is to say, he spent a lot of time away from Springfield, going from one county courthouse to another, county seat, to conduct law business, which was common in those days. Every spring and every fall, you would go out as a lawyer to in the 1830s and 40s and into the 50s. And so Lincoln was away from home a lot, and he stayed away from home much longer than most lawyers did. And so that just added fuel to the fire. Mary was her sense of abandonment by her father was then exacerbated by her sense of abandonment by Lincoln, that he was staying away from home so much. And Lincoln, on the other hand, had a hard time relating to women, to trusting women, because he apparently interpreted the death of his mother as a kind of act of abandonment. And the lesson he learned was, don't get emotionally close to women. Don't trust them. And it should be pointed out, by the way, that insofar as the Lincoln marriage was woe-filled, which it truly was, it wasn't just her fault, that Lincoln was emotionally reserved and uncommunicative more than most men. And he was unable to provide for the kind of nurturance and love and support that Mary Todd craved. She was exceptionally needy, and he was exceptionally incapable of meeting those needs.
Hey everyone, Scott here. We're going to take a very short break for a word from our sponsors. I've mentioned on the show many times that a lot of historians think Abraham Lincoln had Marfan syndrome, which psychologically can lead to depression, melancholy, as they call it at the time. It also can cause someone to have abnormally long limbs, explaining his height, his handiness with an axe, also abnormally large hands. And I think I read somewhere that he tried to cover them up just because of how odd it would appear in photographs. With Mary, though, there's a take by historians to try to look at forensic clues if there are historical figures that are mentally ill or insane in the legal sense, like the Caligulas of the past or King Charles of France, who thought he was made of glass, or others. For those who think Mary Todd suffered from this or that mental illness, what are some of the explanations out there? I think I've heard bipolar disorder, but what is your take?
Oh, absolutely. It's pretty clear that she was bipolar. She went through manic phases where she would spend wildly, and then through depressive stages where she would be inconsolable and physically and emotionally removed from everybody. Even from the time she was young, her friend said she was always in the attic or in the basement, you know, that she was either very manic or very depressed. And that is, manic depression is usually a result not of life experiences, but of inherited genes. So it looks as though she inherited the manic depressive gene. There's an awful lot of mental illness in Mary Lincoln's family. Siblings, step-siblings, aunts and uncles, cousins. And so to some extent, her mental difficulty was inherited. And to some extent, it was a result of this syndrome where her mother dies early, the father quickly remarries, the new stepmother is unsympathetic, the child resents the new stepmother, is resentful to the father for having chosen this woman who then, and then the father tunes them out. So that it was a combination, I think, of both her life experiences, particularly the early death of the mother and the quick remarriage of the father to an unsympathetic stepmother, and the inherited manic depressive gene. And if you look at her siblings, you find particularly her sister Elodie, a very striking parallel, very similar temperaments. And Elodie just says, I'm a Todd. I have a terrible temper. I'm very unforgiving. I'm a very difficult person. Mary never wrote such a letter, but she behaved as though that described her character and personality.
Right. And we'll come back to some of the more famous episodes. But one thing you note in your book is that in all likelihood, Mary seduced Abraham, the reason that they were wed, and he insisted they wed to protect their honor. Can you describe that incident? And also, I'm curious for you as a historian, it must have been challenging to understand that and read between the lines with 19th century sources, because today with presidents, we have tell-all accounts from Secret Service agents that will spill the beans. We have everyone who comes out of the woodwork. So any president who served in the last, I don't know, 70 years, you can learn any intimate detail you really want. But how do you piece that together at a time when discussion of such matters was fundamentally different?
Of course, it's a very important point. And it's very difficult to write a book about a marriage in which neither party tells you very much. Lincoln was pretty uncommunicative about his marriage. And Mrs. Lincoln, although she wrote a lot of letters, and constantly talked about how she adored her husband and how he adored her and all that, there's very little communication between them while they were married. And the communication that existed is pretty sparse and it's pretty cool. And Mrs. Lincoln writes to her husband during the war saying, you are not given to letter writing. Won't you please at least send a word or two by telegram to let me and Taddy know that you care about us? And that Lincoln reports when he's out on the circuit that he goes for weeks on end without hearing from his wife. And then there are virtually no letters from the circuit to her for those many, many years. So you have to go as best we can on reminiscent accounts. And now you have to use reminiscences carefully to be sure. because as Mark Twain once observed, the older I get, the more vividly I remember things that never happened. So you have to use reminiscences in conjunction with contemporary evidence as best you can. But the reminiscences about the marriage come from neighbors in Springfield in particular, and servants who worked in the home. The neighborhood, this was before air conditioning, so during the warm weather, the windows were open, and so when Mrs. Lincoln would have her temper tantrums and berate her husband at the top of her lungs, it was widely known in the neighborhood, and many of them, and when she chased him out of the house with a broom, or chased him out of the house with a piece of stove wood, or chased him out of the house throwing things at him, all the neighbors saw that. And there's a huge corpus of testimony from neighbors, including women. Now, you'll oftentimes hear that the negative portrayal of Mrs. Lincoln is a result of male reminiscences, and the men were hopelessly biased because of their gender. But in fact, there's an enormous amount of evidence from women who observed Mrs. Lincoln in action and were shocked by her very unladylike and abusive behavior. So you get a lot of information about how she mistreated him, how she physically abused him, how she verbally abused him, how she mistreated her children, how she mistreated her servants. She had this terrible temper and a violent streak. She would strike servants, just slap them and hit them with a broom. And same thing with Lincoln. She physically abused him to the point where he would retreat from his home to his office to stay away from her abuse as much as he could. And every now and then he would turn on her and say, "You make this house intolerable, damn it, now get out." Or occasionally she would chase him out of the house and he would turn on and say, "Stop embarrassing us in front of the neighbors, get back in the house." And you get this kind of testimony from so many different people, from men and women alike, you can't just dismiss it as gossip. So there's that. Now about the hypothesis that she seduced Lincoln and therefore got him to marry her, and she trapped him into marriage. That was not my original idea. When I first wrote about the Lincoln marriage a long time ago, that idea hadn't occurred to me. But then a very fine Lincoln scholar in Springfield, a gentleman named Wayne Temple, wrote a very fine book about Lincoln's religion. And in the course of that, as a kind of throwaway line, he suggests that Mary Todd seduced Lincoln and trapped him into marriage. Now, he doesn't develop that. That's an aside in a fine book about Lincoln's religion. And I thought, heavens, why hadn't I thought about that? And so I started to think about it, and noticed that there was some evidence to that effect, that Lincoln had two groomsmen on his wedding day. And one of them, a guy named James Matheny, who was very close to Lincoln, said on more than one occasion that Lincoln told him that he was forced into the marriage. And that one of his very good friends, with whom he shared a lot, and he didn't share with many people, but he did share with this gentleman named Orville Browning. And Browning said that he believed that if Lincoln had that she pursued him quite vigorously, and B, that if he'd had his druthers, he probably wouldn't have married her. And I thought, now that's interesting. And it's very curious, but the marriage took place on one day's notice. And this was extremely unusual for people in the social class to which Mary Todd Lincoln belonged. Her older sister, Elizabeth, was married to Ninian Edwards, the son of the governor, former governor. They lived on Aristocracy Hill. They moved in the most exalted social and economic circles in Springfield. And Elizabeth had given a gala wedding for her sister Anne, who lived in Springfield. And then Then when Mary came along, it was assumed that she would get a gala wedding too, and it would be a big social event. Well, no, all of a sudden, on one day's notice, Lincoln announces that he is going to get married, and Mary tells her sister, I'm going to get married today. And so it was very rushed and hurried, which cries out for some explanation. And then Robert Todd Lincoln, their first child, is born slightly less than 9 months later. Now that in and of itself isn't proof, but it is suggestive. And you may recall in the movie, Sally Field doing her excellent portrayal of Mrs. Lincoln in an argument with Daniel Day-Lewis portraying Lincoln, angrily says that I want Robert to stay out of the army. And Lincoln says, well, I think really our son should go. And she says, well, we've already lost two sons and it would just kill me to lose a third. And Lincoln says, well, dear, so many other mothers and fathers have given all their sons and all of them have died. So we mustn't be selfish about it. And then she turns on him and says, in the movie now, you think I trapped you into the marriage and that the Robert was the result of that. You've never liked him. And I almost fell out of my seat because I had been consulted on the movie. I and Catherine Clinton and about a dozen people had met with Spielberg for a full day conference in New York, along with Tony Kushner, the playwright who did the screenplay. And that had never come up in our discussion, but I had included that hypothesis in my big book, my 2000 page biography of Lincoln that appeared in 2009. And so I thought, well, my goodness, Tony Kushner must have read my book. and so I was rather flattered about that. So you can't prove it beyond a doubt that the seduction hypothesis is true. But if you accept the seduction hypothesis, it explains a number of things. Why the marriage took place on one day's notice. Why Lincoln told one of his groomsmen that he was forced into the marriage. Why when he was asked, when he was going to the wedding ceremony, where are you going? To hell, I suppose, Lincoln said. It was said that he looked like an animal being led to the slaughter rather than a groom being led to his wedding, although I'm told that some men, lots of men feel that way. Lincoln was... As a president, was famous for bending over backwards to find excuses to override death sentences for soldiers who had been court-martialed and condemned to death. And he's going through the court-martial cases and deciding whether to pardon this soldier or that soldier. And one of the cases involved a fellow who had deserted his post in order to go home because he had heard a rumor that his fiancée was flirting with another fellow, and he wanted to nip that romance in the bud. And so he went back, deserted his army unit, went back home, married his sweetheart. And Lincoln said, well, I think the young man should be punished. So I think I'll pardon him. And about a year from now, he'll probably wish that I hadn't issued the pardon. So Lincoln's view of marriage was somewhat jaded, to say the least. And anyway, so the seduction hypothesis, I think, explains some of those things that otherwise are inexplicable. Then from that flows the story of the unhappy marriage. So,
well, Lincoln, not quite the Casanova. He's definitely no Warren G. Harding in that department, which is a very good thing. So if listeners want to hear an episode on presidents who do have a way with relationships, they can hear my Warren G. Harding episode. He's good at that, if very little else. Well, to get into Lincoln's political career, whether in Illinois, whether as president, I'm fascinated that it seems like it would be an open secret of their terrible marriage. And it sounds like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the play. If listeners aren't aware of that, I mean, it's essentially these two characters watching other two characters' marriage break down in front of them, terribly uncomfortable. Many of us has probably been in that terribly awkward situation. We're watching a couple bicker in front of each other. My favorite television series is the American version of The Office. And the greatest episode is with two characters, Michael and Jan, are making everyone deeply uncomfortable with their open hostility to each other and their relationship. So with that That functioning, how did Lincoln successfully carry out his political career? Was it an open secret wherever he was at how broken his marriage was with Mary?
I think so, but it was considered off limits at that time. As you mentioned earlier, Kennedy could get away with his dalliances because the press had an unspoken agreement that they wouldn't probe into the personal lives of presidential candidates. Well, that is no longer the case, of course. But I think that was the reigning notion at the time. But it should be pointed out that in 1864, when Lincoln was running for re-election, it became a topic for Democrats to harp upon. Not that it was an unhappy marriage, because that was considered out of bounds, but that she had misbehaved very badly as first lady. And she had. She had padded payroll. She had padded expense accounts. She accepted bribes. She extorted bribes. She sold cotton trading permits. She sold state secrets to the press. She behaved very badly. And one of the most dramatic discoveries in my 30 plus years of Lincoln research was an interview with Orville Browning, the fellow I mentioned earlier, who was a good friend of Lincoln's back in Illinois and then was in Washington during the Civil War as a senator. And Browning says in an interview that I discovered that hadn't been published, who conducted with Browning 10 years after the assassination by Lincoln's principal White House secretary, a guy named John G. Nicolay. And in this interview, 10 years after the assassination, Browning says that I used to go to the White House regularly and regularly told me about his domestic troubles and how he was constantly worried that his wife would do something to disgrace him publicly. And of course, he knew that she overspent government appropriations on White House furnishings, which he called flub dub, and how she had engaged in spending sprees that were excessive, to say the least. And these were publicized. Her shopping trips were scandalized the public. She was criticized a lot, not because she was a difficult wife, but because she woman who seemed to be indifferent to the suffering that went on around her, that she seemed to be concerned primarily with elaborate dress and fancy parties and the like, and was out of touch with going on. And so she became an object of ridicule that the Democrats played upon in the 1864 election for her extravagance and for her concern with fashion and dress and spending vacations away from Washington and not really doing much in the way of visiting hospitals and the like, so that she did become something of a political liability, more than a little bit of a political liability, but not because she was an abusive and unsupportive wife, but because she was involved in unethical activities to a great extent.
Hey everyone, Scott here. One more brief word from our sponsors.
I suppose we come to the crux of your book, and that is the influence that their marriage had on Lincoln's presidency. For those who are the Mary Lincoln apologists, they would place her somewhere between Eleanor Roosevelt and Abigail Adams, that she was a strong influence on her husband. She fortified him in Lincoln's case. Mary Lincoln gave him the abolitionist impetus to issue the Emancipation Proclamation and everything else. And then on the other side of the pendulum is that Lincoln was great because of his sufferings, whether it's due to his depression, whether it's due to his troubled marriage. Being able to navigate those in his personal life gave him the moral clarity to lead America in its absolute darkest days. So what is your take on their marriage and how it influenced the Lincoln presidency?
Lincoln's political views and views on slavery and the like were absolutely uninfluenced by Mary Todd. The notion that she was an ardent abolitionist is preposterous. The evidence to the contrary is overwhelming. She almost never discusses politics in her letters. But one letter that we do have was written shortly after the 1856 election, the first time that a Republican had run for president. And he was obviously the anti-slavery champion, a guy named John C. Fremont. And he had campaigned against a Democrat and then a third party candidate of something called the American Party, which was also known as the Know Nothing Party, and a guy named Millard Fillmore, who had actually been a president earlier. And so Lincoln in 1856 campaigns extensively for the anti-slavery Republican candidate, John C. Fremont. And he goes here, there, and everywhere, and he knocks himself out, gives dozens and dozens of speeches for Fremont, engages in organizing efforts, is just exerts himself to the utmost. Shortly after the election, his wife then writes to her favorite sister and says, well, I couldn't vote, but if I were to vote, I would not have voted for the Republican. I would have voted for the know-nothing candidate, Fillmore, because the know-nothing candidates, as a know-nothing candidate, he appreciates how troublesome and difficult the foreign-born are. And that's what the know-nothing party stood for. It was hostility to immigrants and hostility to Catholics. And so Mrs. Lincoln says, I would have supported Fillmore, not Fremont. And that's because you Kentuckians don't appreciate how we housewives in Illinois have to deal with the wild Irish, that is the servant girls who worked in homes like the Lincoln home tended to be from Ireland. And she would put the Fillmore knew how to put them in their place. And you think, this woman is an ardent abolitionist, please. And then what I've discovered, I have a book coming, in my current book, and then I have another book coming out in November, which deals more extensively with this, that at White House receptions during Lincoln's administration, Lincoln was always cordial and welcoming and warm to Black guests who came to White House receptions. But Mrs. Lincoln wasn't. Mrs. Lincoln was scandalized. And that, when Black guests started to show up, she would tell guards to stop it, to go to the door and say, no more Black guests. And when Sojourner Truth, the great Black woman abolitionist, who was a grandmother, came to Washington and met with Lincoln, and she'd done that, when she came later and tried to attend a White House reception that Mrs. Lincoln was given, she was denied admission. And Lincoln was deeply upset when he was told the next couple of days later that Sojourner Truth had been denied admission. And he said he would do everything he could to undo that damage. So that the notion that Mrs. Lincoln profoundly affected Lincoln's anti-slavery views is simply untrue. Now, what other influence did she have on Lincoln as a political figure? Well, I think one of the reasons that studying the marriage is important is that that Lincoln might not have become president, and he might not have been the kind of president he was if it hadn't been for the person that he married. Now, let me investigate the first part of that statement first. Why was she important in getting Lincoln to become president? Well, she was extremely ambitious. She really wanted to be famous, and she knew the best way to be famous was to be a president's wife. And that desire to become famous was rooted in her sense of being unloved and unlovable, that because her stepmother was unsympathetic and because her father had tuned her out, she grew up with this sense that she was unloved and unlovable. And that people who suffer from that oftentimes seek for surrogate forms of love, which can be fame, money, social power, and the like. And so she then heavily emphasizes this ambition to become famous by making Lincoln strive to become famous. Now, Lincoln was ambitious to begin with, but her ambition was greater than his. And she turbocharged his little engine of ambition. And if he hadn't married a woman who was so ambitious and so willing to prod her husband and to goad him and to urge him on and to keep going and go, 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 she kept urging him, he may not have gone as far as he did. And second, when he became president, he displayed a truly remarkable ability to deal with difficult people. And when you look at the record of Lincoln dealing with egomaniacal senators like Charles Sumner and backbiting cabinet members like Salmon Chase and hypercritical newspaper editors like Horace Greeley and difficult members of Congress, the cabinet, the press, his own party. And one of the remarkable things is that he never took disagreement personally. He never took criticism personally. He never quarreled. He showed remarkable ability to deal with these difficult people without losing his temper, without becoming estranged, without personalizing disputes. And I think one of the reasons that he was so gifted in his ability to deal with difficult people is that he had had a lot of practice at home. So those are important things that affect Lincoln as president, the fact that he became president and then the fact that he became a successful president was in part due to her influence.
Would you say then that although Lincoln had nothing in the way of domestic bliss, if we were to engineer the type of marriage that would allow him to be as successful as possible during his presidency, that Mary was the perfect woman for him with all of her strengths and faults?
I suppose that'd be one way of putting it. And one of his good friends, a guy named Henry Clay Whitney, said that the United States owes its existence as a unified nation to Mary Todd Lincoln.
All right. Yeah.
That Lincoln had been schooled in the hard discipline of domestic troubles, and that enabled him to deal with difficult people as president. So that's not just my idea. It was what some of his best friends said.
Right. Quite the backhanded compliment, but a compliment, I suppose. Well, I appreciate what you've done in the book because you've raised a lot of themes and you're also trying to push back against narratives that, however good intention they are, aren't based on strong evidence. And an aphorism I've heard frequently is, you know, behind every man, there's a great woman. And there's a good intention. I mean, as you've discussed, that when you're going far enough back in history among females who could have been equally, if not more prominent than males around them, the sourcing just doesn't give us a lot of details with what's going on. But on the same token, if we're talking about important females in history like Margaret Thatcher, nobody really credits her husband with making Margaret Thatcher the woman she was. But I suppose what takeaway do you hope that readers can get from your book? First, I mean, the story between Mary and Abraham, but then also in, I suppose, the larger historiographical sweep of how we understand history as well. What are some takeaways you hope readers can get?
Well, for one thing, the contribution that I try to make is that there's an enormous amount of evidence and information that people have ignored. And I found this when I did my big 2,000-page biography. I had no idea that I was doing such a work when I first, my first book many years ago. But I found that there was so much new information that previous historians had ignored that it cried out for a new study of Lincoln from birth to death. And that's particularly true of the marriage. And since that time, there's been a lot more evidence unearthed because of the development of these remarkable newspaper databases, word searchable databases, which are like giant magnets that allow you to pull all kinds of needles out of the haystack. So one thing about the book is that it emphasizes the importance of doing original research in archival sources, unpublished sources, not just previous scholarly works and popular works, but go out there and get your fingernails dirty and do research in unpublished sources, in letters, in manuscripts, in diaries that exist in universities and historical societies and the like throughout the country. And then do a lot of research in newspaper archives and do a lot of research in government archives, because an awful lot of evidence about Mrs. Lincoln's unethical behavior shows up in the records of Congress and the Interior Department. So one, judge historical works in part, in large part, upon whether the authors were willing to do original research. A second takeaway, and a major takeaway, is that it's impossible to fully appreciate Lincoln's achievement, his extraordinary ability to overcome adversity, unless you understand the adversity of his domestic life. It's remarkable to see how Lincoln overcomes the poverty of his youth, the early death of his mother, the unsympathetic father, the death of his favorite child, all those things. But on top of all that, and then also dealing with the terrible burden of the Civil War, with the responsibility resting on his shoulders and the shoulders of a very small White House staff, two guys in their 20s primarily. And yet how he became so successful despite the crushing burdens of leadership during the war, despite his early childhood problems, but and also despite the fact that his wife was not a, a supportive, nurturing, helpful person. She was a burden to him, a source of endless woe and worry and difficulty. And the achievement of Lincoln as a man who was able to accomplish as much as he did despite this difficult marriage, despite this difficult childhood, despite those career failures and all that, I think makes Lincoln a worthwhile study, not just because he's a champion of democracy and national unity and racial equality, but also because he can serve as a kind of personal inspiration for all of us, that no matter how difficult life has, difficult a hand that life has dealt with us, you can still become a mature, social, psychologically sound and creative and effective person. So that's one thing I think about Lincoln's story in general, but it particularly pertains to the story of his marriage. And finally, one thing I would like to stress too is, and I make this point in the book, as you know, is that Mary Lincoln is more to be pitied than censured. That when her mother dies at six, when her father remarries an unsympathetic woman, when she inherits the manic depressive gene, she suffers from terrible migraine headaches, she suffers from difficult menstrual problems, three of her four children die before they reach adulthood. Her husband gets murdered by her side at the peak of his fame and fortune. The Almighty ladles out a fair amount of misery on all human plates, but her portion of misery was particularly helping. And therefore, I think she does deserve more to be pitied than censured. However, having said that, she did make her husband's life miserable. So both of those things have to be borne in mind.
Well, thank you for sharing all this. And you've made a good point that research always needs to be ongoing because Lincoln is perhaps one of the best studied figures in American history. Yet many sources about him were either overlooked, unknown, or ignored. So there's always vigorous work to be done. And for listeners who want to get into this story, there's a lot more to unpack. And I think many aspects of Lincoln's life, both Lincolns, I didn't realize. And the book is An American Marriage, The Untold Story of Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd. Michael, thank you for joining us.
Scott, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, well, that wraps things up for today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking with me to the end. Once again, I want to start things off by thanking the Spymasters of History Unplugged. I'll explain what that is in a second. Our Spymasters include Bill Ivey, Moondoggy from Ohio, Tom from Ohio, Ryan Gillen, Rob from Chicago, Nick Brooks, Michael from New York, Carl from Norway, Josh Reddick, Jennifer French Lee, Jay Carrington, McCrays, Salvador Sanchez, David Santee, Chris C., and Baron Fraser. If you'd like to support the show, there's some very easy ways to do so. First, go to the site halfpricehistory.com. I've worked out an arrangement with a lot of the authors who've appeared on this show, and you can go there and get their books for 50% off. All you have to do is go to halfpricehistory.com and enter the promo code UNPLUGGED at checkout. Second, please leave a review and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast player of choice, whether Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher or whatever. Third, join our Facebook group. You can go to Facebook and search for History Unplugged. There, you can talk with other fans of the show about recent episodes, what you liked, what you didn't like. Also, I have exclusive content there, such as live streams, where I do live versions of podcast episodes where you can leave feedback as I'm talking, and I will address it on air. Last, and I think this is the best, is to join our membership program, the Knowlton's Rangers.
Though Knowlton's Rangers were George Washington's spies during the Revolutionary War, but it's also the name of the membership program for History Unplugged. If you go to patreon.com/unplugged, you can join the membership program at three levels. If you join at the Scout level, you'll get all 400 episodes of History Unplugged absolutely ad-free and early access to new episodes. If you join at the second level, the Intelligence Officer level, you get all the stuff that Scouts get, along with bonus episodes. There's currently about 40 of them, including series on Audie Murphy and Operation Long Jump about the Nazi attempt to assassinate FDR, Churchill, and Stalin in 1943. Finally, if you join at the Spymaster level, you'll get a shout-out to you and or your business at the end of each episode. You get a 3-pack of hardcover history books, and you can find out what those are if you go to patreon.com/unplugged. Finally, you can ask me a question about history on absolutely any topic on earth, and I will research it and devote an entire episode to your question. Probably about 30% of the questions in the archive for the show have been based on these sorts of questions. So there you go. Go to patreon.com/unplugged to learn more. All right, well, that is all for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.